when you want to access parts of your sexuality, you might need to put that to the side for a moment and rediscover the seductress or the lover. And breaking out of an archetype, breaking out of a calcified place that you've become over-identified with, is a powerful journey.
Hello, this is Shashi Saluna from Live Tantra and Tantra Made Easy. And today I'm going to be exploring a topic that is really, really interesting, which is about how we can become our authentic selves and using the path of sexual healing. How is our sexual energy and our sexuality and our sexual expression connected to being able to feel whole and authentic and integrated? And my expert today that I'm inviting in is Freya McFarlane, and it's such a great joy to be bringing her in. She's one of the very few people who I feel can replace me. That's a big thing to say. She's a superb facilitator and has taught at my site many times. And she actually brings her an amazing, unique gift into the world of sacred sexuality, as she trained as a midwife. And not only in the medical world, she also went and worked with indigenous midwives in the mountains in Central America. And so she brings this beautiful mixture of like ancient indigenous wisdom and Celtic wisdom and rituals and ceremonies together with her great understanding of midwifery, of birth and death, of tantra, of sacred sexuality, of trauma healing. So we are going to explore this topic today. Let me invite her in. Welcome, Freya.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Shashi.
Thank you for being here. I love having these deep conversations with you, and it's great to be able to share with others. Before we dive into the topic of today, I've spoken about your bio, but would you like to share a bit about your own journey of like, how did you end up working in sacred sexuality?
Yeah, thank you. I really came into sacred sexuality after working as a midwife on the NHS and seeing how many women were having assisted births and seeing how disconnected they were from their bodies. I feel like I had more conversations in the hospital about fear of pooping themselves than actually feeling connected to people's pussies and feeling connected to their sexual energy. And it really led me down this path of inquiry around what does it take birth, and then that led me into embodiment, sexuality, blood mysteries, and really wanting to dive into these art forms as a way to be more deeply in the body and be able to move through these huge passages and portals, because I have a lifelong connection to birth, but also seeing how medical disconnection actually doesn't really give us the tools to be able to bring children into the world. So I completely got absorbed down that road.
Could you talk a little bit more about, like you just said, women talk more about fear of pooping themselves. So I guess you're reflecting on like deep fear, shame, body shame, right? And shame about, you know, like I've also assisted some births and there's a lot of blood and poop and mess and whatever. Could you talk a little bit more about what you observed and what you learned about us as modern women?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I noticed that women were actually holding their anal sphincter in, and there was a lot of contraction, so the jaw was often quite clenched, and they didn't want their partners to see them pooping themselves. There was a lot of mental thought going into that experience, rather than relaxing the pelvic floor, focusing more on the breath, relaxing the jaw. And so it was this dual experience of they wanted to open up their yonis, but they were also scared of their anus opening up too much and pooping. And I realized, wow, it's a lot to ask to push a baby out into the world when you don't have that intimate relationship with your pussy.
Yeah, and your whole body, right? Yeah. It's like what you're sharing just, you know, makes me feel, you know, also growing up in a very normal middle class British upbringing of like, you know, having shame around pooping, farting, sweating, and bleeding, and all these things. And yet I discovered that in order to be a sexual being, you have to overcome that. You have to own this animal body. You have to own the smells and the good ones and the bad ones. You know, otherwise we're not going to have fun. We're not going to be sexually free. And it's really interesting to hear you relate to that to birth, because you know, it's really affecting us on all levels.
So much. And I think that experience of clenching comes right back to a lot of us when we're at school, that experience of sitting in the classroom, and the only thing you're thinking about is, God, please don't let me bleed onto my school skirt and let the whole school see me. And so a lot of my work has become around just let go of that, find a way into the place where you're still holding the schoolgirl shame, and seeing how that schoolgirl shame plays out in birth, sex, relatability. Don't watch me poop.
And presumably school boy shame as well, right? I mean, we all know that like boys can fart and laugh about it more freely than girls in many cultural conditionings. But
Yes.
I've also experienced that like anal massage for men can open up a lot. Have you also worked with men on these topics? What have you learned there?
Yeah, a lot of men are clenching that fear of farting, fear of having their masculinity diminished by someone else seeing them in that experience. And that constricts around the capacity to be intimate with somebody else, because we're holding back from the parts that we're in judgment or projection that they're shameful. And suddenly my whole body can go really tense when I see that and I feel that. It's like, oh, let's open up together, because we all become mirrors of it.
So basically, we became a little too civilized for our own pleasure, for our own good.
Absolutely. Think of England has gone too far.
Well, I know, hasn't it just? So let's talk about the healing journey. We face the problem. It's funny because sometimes you and I like put on really posh accents and pretend to teach tantric finishing school or whatever, like make a joke out of it. But it is actually a very serious, you know, matter that so many people really struggle to enjoy sexuality and intimacy and pleasure, and that can also affect their sexual energy flow, right? So yeah, should we talk a bit more about how to heal it? What did you find? What did you find on your journey? Because your journey obviously started with going off to train with midwives in the mountains. Maybe you want to bring that piece in as well as the tantra. What did you find were the difference when you went to more indigenous midwives compared to the modern ones?
They didn't care. They were truly in touch with their full wild. The majority of the women I was helping were on a mud floor, and their jaw was completely relaxed. That was the first thing I noticed. And they were just completely and utterly devoted to their bodies going through it. And they made spectacular sounds, very guttural. And a lot of my close friends say, oh, you're so focused on the perineum, Freya. But when I was in Latin America, that's what I noticed, is they were intricately sounding through their whole body, and that was a big difference. Whereas British women didn't feel comfortable making any sound. And I noticed they let their hair go wild. They let their legs fully open. They let people come in close to support them. And what I noticed in the UK was they only let people in when they were close to the edge, rather than in Latin America, they stayed regulated with the support the whole way through. So from a very early stage, they were comfortable being seen, comfortable being in their wild. And so when things got more intense, they had that established sense of the container's safe and set up for me to go through it. And the big thing I learned is death is essential in birth. So in all the births I went to, just before they were about to give birth, they would scream, "Ya voy a morir," I'm going to die. And then a few seconds later, they would give birth. It was uncanny. And so they were surrendering to that death process, and then their baby was born. And it was like the maiden in me is dying. I'm going to die. It's all gonna collapse from here. And like, wow, that's
that makes
it.
me think of a great orgasm, you know, like, and just letting it all through, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of fear in their eyes as well, but
yeah,
it was also this moment of, it's going to happen, and here I go. Death is upon me.
Yeah. So what do you think happened? Do we have a collective trauma in the West? I mean, you and I are British, but, you know, I think other Western countries are similar. Do we have, is it trauma? Is it just being too civilized? Like, what happened to us that we no longer make guttural sounds, open our legs, you know, let our hair down, open our jaw? Like, the jaw is such a big piece, isn't it? So what do you think happened along the way?
I think one of the pieces is we stopped being so connected to our bodies. I remember having a chat with a midwife in Latin America, and I asked her, how do your women prepare? And she said to me, they scrub the floor. they do the housework, but not for the house. They do it for the body. And they're down on their knees, and they're breathing a lot, and they're scrubbing up and down. And I suddenly realized, oh, women in the West don't do these motions, you know, sit on the sofa a lot more. We don't experience ourselves as fully integrated in our bodies. And so the pelvic floor doesn't have the same strength and vitality as maybe it used to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are big differences in the way that we use our bodies. And that would mm-hmm. be one that I point to.
Yeah, so less embodied and more civilized and more sitting on the couch and more in our minds.
Yeah, and I think also a big one is belief. In Latin America, there is no choice. And they speak mm-hmm. from that place, like, I'm giving birth. And you can feel the totality and the end point of that. It's like, there is no other way. There are no drugs for me. There is no hospital for me. There is
no one's going to come cut it out.
No one's going to kind of cut it out. It's only one way out. And that's it's happening. And here I notice the language is very different. It's like, well, I'm going to try and have a natural birth. I'm going to do my best. And always with that feeling of if I have to, there's that option. And when there is no option, you have to do it.
Yeah. So interesting. So let's swing over to sexuality a bit more now. And obviously they're so connected, which actually is a good point, because a lot of people focus so much on sexuality, completely forget that it was ever connected to birth. And I think it's really good to keep that memory there, that acknowledgement, even if we don't have children, that actually these two are so related. And, you know, but yeah, let's talk a bit, you know, because as you're talking about these women trying to give birth with clenched jaws and not being able to make sounds, disconnect from their body and afraid of poop, I just think about, like, well, how did they even get the sperm in there in the first place? Like, what did the sex look like with a clenched jaw without making sound, with worrying about, you know, probably don't worry you're going to poop, but you do worry about your smell or your sweat or something.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's all intrinsically connected. Mm-hmm. Blood, sex, and birth. I always think of them in a triangle. And how we make love is how we're going to birth. How we treat our blood is how we're going to have sex and how we have birth experiences. So it's like, can you surrender to all your smells in sexuality and open your legs fully wide and make the fullest sound? I mean, I've got a deep belief that the more embodied we are with our sexuality, the easier it is to give birth, because those energies are fused, sexual energy and birth energy.
Yeah.
And so what
if somebody's listening to this and they're like, oh my God, I never make sound, and I'm, you know, they're feeling all that shame and restriction they have. What do they do about it? What do you do with your clients? You work one-on-one doing coaching as well as facilitating groups, right?
Yeah. First of all sounds are beautiful, and some of them can be very loud and expansive, and then some of them can be really subtle, and they're all welcome. And that sometimes the most subtle sounds can be the most powerful. And it's not about how big it is, but it's about how authentic it is to that person. And I've heard some sounds that externally may seem really quiet, but I can feel that their throat, their sound is fully connected to their whole body, even though it it's sounding very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very individual. And the first thing I would do is invite people to love their sound exactly as it shows up in that moment. And we go through a process of opening up the flute and listening to where the sound naturally wants to sit, and then taking deep breaths into that place, and then slowly, because it's a gradual process to open up sound, we go down deeper, and we might feel where the blockages are and breathe into them, be compassionate for them.
Just like a normal sound, just like sitting here and going, ah, or like sounding whilst activating energy or.
Yeah, initially it's just noticing the sound as you just did, and then we start to introduce sexual energy. So I might give my clients a practice around massaging their perineum and making sound, or having a bath and making sound, and then go eventually getting into self-pleasure practices. But a lot of it is about tracking where in the body is the sound going, and then inviting it to go that little bit deeper and stretching it like we would an elastic band.
Yeah, I love that. I love that concept. And I really resonate with this. I feel like sound is a key. And I know there are people who they want to come to Tantra and they're like, I want to learn all the techniques, but I don't want to make the silly sounds. Can I just get Tantra without having to make the silly sounds? And it's like, well, no, you don't get to pick and choose. You know, if you want to let your energy flow, you got to let your sound flow. There's no way around it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and different sounds are connected to different chakra points. So some particular sounds might be really dynamic and open, maybe those deep guttural earthy sounds, just like somebody who's connected to the primordial aspects, very wild, very in their activation. But then the more subtle, higher frequency sounds might not be opened up yet. And the more attuned you become with where the sound is open, the more you can feel the full opening of your flute. Then it gets really fun because you can play between the realms. It's like it's not just one sound. It's, oh, I'm in my heart sound. I'm in my root sound. I'm in my crown sound. And you can make love from those different places by meeting sound in yourself and your partner.
So this was actually one of our topics, was like different aspects of who we are, different archetypes, different energies, different, you know, like one of the topics we really wanted to talk about today is like what happens when we get stuck in one small identity and how that's connected to sexuality. So maybe we can elaborate a little bit more into that. So like I'm already hearing the sound that we can make different sounds and expand our where we're playing, where we're expressing ourselves, different chakras, different you know. In what other ways can you elaborate a bit more about the different expressions of who we are and how that's linked with sexuality?
I got into archetypes because for myself, I wanted to break out of a single identity. I am a British woman. And outside of that, I wanted to find the seductress, the wild woman, the priestess, and I wanted those different energies to connect. And through them, they all have a different way of making love. They all have different wisdom. They can inspire me and actually become my internal teachers and give me access to different aspects of sexual energy. And I find that some of my clients who I attract, particularly women who've had children and they have lost connection to parts of their sexual energy, and they've really been deeply in the mothering role. And that can be, it's an incredible archetype to be in the mother. And when you want to access parts of your sexuality, you might need to put that to the side for a moment and rediscover the seductress or the lover. And breaking out of an archetype, breaking out of a calcified place that you've become over-identified with is a powerful journey. And that's something that I found a great deal of beauty in exploring the round table of wisdom from archetypes.
I imagine a lot of people get stuck in limited roles through relationship as well, not just like being a mother, but also like being a person we think we are with one person. Like monogamy can be so beautiful and bring us so much stability, but probably one of the biggest risks is getting stuck in our own limited identity or a limited role of identity. Do you also help people to explore, you know, like structures doesn't often come into monogamy because you've already seduced and got your person, but you know, do you work with women to become a seductress and seduce their own husband of 20 years or 30 years?
Oh, totally. Those are some magical places to go. And I find it really fascinating and supportive to go there with people who are in a nesting role, for instance, so the nesting partners, and they see each other in a particular way. And as beautiful as that is, it's also powerful to come out of ourselves and be open to the freshness of who are we evolving into now? Can we wake up each day and see new parts and make space for those parts? And sometimes the longer the relationship has been in place, if we haven't been doing practices to explore outside of that, we can over-identify. And it's amazing to see the transformation. Places where we've become stuck become places where we can expand and open and discover new things about each other and be playful again and curious. And it's amazing. I'm very grateful to see those flourishings.
And how is this linked with sexuality? You know, because I know this is such a big part, right? That like people are looking for their, people tend to be quite narrow of like, oh, I'm looking for my sex drive, I've lost it. And they don't realize, well, I've actually lost all these pieces of myself.
I think within the archetypes, they can show you things that you may not have noticed about yourself before. And they can inspire new relationships. They can inspire new parts of our own connection. And so in relationship, there's who am I, who are you, and then what is the entity and energy of our relationship, the third. Mm-hmm. And within that, it's a constantly or changing organic place. And so when we discover new archetypes within that, or how parts want to come together, it can flourish into a completely different organism than it was before, and help us to break out of old patterns and places where there's been excessive conflict.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how's it linked to the, like, literally like sex drive? When you talked about mother, I think about the number of women I've worked with who just feel that when they focus on that role, they feel like they lose touch with their sexuality. And I also had it the other way around in my family, where the men in my family kind of had a conditioning to no longer see a woman who became a mother as a sexual being. I know that happened, you know, in my own family, but the women were like, no, you know, I want to keep this piece alive. So yeah, how is it connected with sexual energy?
It's a really good question. I've got a few clients at the moment that are working with me on this particular piece. And what I mention is, it's really important to come home to yourself first. Like, what's your practice? Are you touching your body? How does it feel when you touch your body? Rediscovering that juiciness and finding the pleasure within yourself, which can be really subtle and soft and delicious, not just necessarily by stimulating your genitals, but by simply caressing your hand and being in your breath and your delight. And then once you've anchored that sense of pleasure and sexual energy for yourself, you can start to bring it more into your relationship. And then you can start to share in that discovery. But the work starts at home first.
And what gets in the way of it? Like we already talked about, like not being able to sound, being afraid to poop. Like it's sometimes not just as simple as to say, bring out your seductress or find your pleasure. Like what are the things that get in the way and how do we clear them?
Overact active lifestyles, all the pieces that we put in the way, computers, looking at phones too much. It's like what I like to do is get people into the architecture of what does our daily life look like and where are the habits that are actually stopping us from being in connection and where can we architect some space to just simply be with each other and bring in some of these tools. I think phones and technology have a lot to answer for in terms of intimacy and how it's blocking us from really meeting each other. And it's going to take, it takes stepping back from those places where we've got those habits of disconnection to create openness for each other.
And what about the shame piece? Like even before phones were around. I mean, when I was a teenager, we didn't have phones, which was a blessing, but we still had all this shame. Like I remember the first date, the first guy I kissed. He invited me on a date, but he invited me around to his pool, and I had too much shame to be like in a bikini in front of him. I just like at that point carried so much, I don't know, it's crazy because I had a great 16, 15-year-old body at that point, but like the shame was so immense to be half naked in front of a boy that I fancied that I turned it down. And it's like, what a start to my intimate life, that the very first opportunity for intimacy, the thing that stopped it was shame. And of course, he just thought I rejected him, and that was that. But it was actually this huge shame block. How do you help
I mean,
women
shame.
or men to move through that?
One of the pieces around shame is first getting into the body enough to be able to feel when something's coming up, like a tightening of the chest or a constriction of the breath, or noticing when there's a shutdown. And I guide people into a place of understanding what shutdown might look like. For years, I had a thing around short skirts, and I remember one of my family members, every time I went out the door, she would comment on my short skirt that I wore to school. And it wasn't until I was in my mid-20s that I realized, when I said to a friend, "Oh no, I don't look good in short skirts. I don't wear short skirts," that I've been doing all this somatic work, that it suddenly clicked. Oh, this comes back to my school skirt. And it was only because I noticed my breath shut down and I'd been doing this work around breathing and tightening that I stopped and really looked at myself. So when we have the ability to look at ourselves and we learn these practices, we can get into the nuances and the subtle ways that shame is still playing out for us as adults. And I convinced myself very strongly, I don't look good in short skirts. So I didn't have a mental track that that's where that particular shame piece came from, because I thought I was the storyteller of that piece. I love short skirts, but it did take me a little bit of time to let them back in and do the internal rewiring to get there with myself.
So the trick really is to notice when there's constriction, contraction in the body, shortness of breath, or any of these kind of somatic signs. And then what would you speak it out? Like if you were with a partner and they were touching you, would you encourage people to say, oh, I'm noticing this and this and this?
A big piece is having the capacity to slow everything down, and when they come up, they might not even seem very obvious at first, but it's like, ah, something is present right now. Can I slow down enough? Can we take a breath? Can we pause? I just need to feel what's there for a moment. And with that space, then we can start to uncover it. Sometimes we can get into habits of overriding ourselves, and that's when stories can come in, like, oh, well, if I pull back now, he's going to not want to keep being sexual with me, or I'm going to experience rejection. And we override those places where there's something coming up in the moment. And so the biggest piece is letting ourselves feel it and letting ourselves be seen in the experience that we're having. And it takes a lot of courage. so much vulnerability and creating trust with a partner to be able to share when those moments come up.
Mm-hmm. Does it take two partners choosing to do this kind of sexual healing, or do you think, you know, can one start and, you know, hope that their beloved is open to that? Like, what's the best way to, if, you know, let's say a woman comes to work with you and she really wants to heal this shame, does she need to tell her partner she's doing this?
I mean, in an ideal world, sure, it would be, it's ideal to do this as shared work. And I genuinely believe that when we do the work on ourselves, then we're rippling out and the shifts that come. And then sometimes the other partner can see the impact that's happening with the other, and then they want to get on board. It can have different paces, and that's okay. It's really about us doing the internal work, and then we can share with our partners, I'm doing this work and I'd really love it if we could shift these little things, and we can start to introduce those pieces into the relationship slowly, but including them as much as we can, or as much as they're comfortable at the pace that feels comfortable, and not expecting everything to change overnight. Because sometimes I get some clients like, I really need to shift this in my relationship. It's like, okay, well, let's again slow it right down. Let's focus on you first, and then we can see how we can introduce this more into the relationship without overloading them, because everyone's going at their own pace. Mm. Everyone deserves to have the space to integrate different pieces at their own pace.
Mm. That's really beautiful, beautifully said. I know that a lot of women who come and do the teach training with us, you know, they do this month intensive and then sort of have this urgency. Her partner back home has just been like sitting at the office for a month, like to have like 3 hour extended orgasms with them and perfect conscious communication, yes, and all these pieces, and can feel like a lot of pressure on the partner. And I think it's, I love that you keep emphasizing slowing things down.
And compassion for how much it must be for the other partner to receive this goddess who's come back after doing all this work, and loving the process of integrating that into the relationship. But it does take time. And as much as it takes to transform, it takes time.
And many, many people we hear, you know, we see and we hear, oh, women are leading the way. There's been goddess groups and women's groups and women's circles for a long time, and they tend to be bigger. There are men's groups starting and there are men's groups catching up, but there's definitely kind of a bit of an imbalance. But you work with men as well as with women, right? Do you find there's a big difference in the journey that they're on, or are they essentially looking at the same kind of pieces?
The men who come and work with me are incredibly beautiful men, and I think it takes a lot of courage to come to a tantric intimacy practitioner and speak about some of the things that's coming up for them. So a lot of them who are really wanting to change their sexuality tend to have premature ejaculation, erectile dysfunction, or being in relationships where there is no longer sexuality, and a recognition that they need to move their sexual energy, but they don't know how. Mm-hmm. And I really admire the courage to come out and seek help. So they tend to be really committed. They tend to really want to learn the tools. And then there are also men who are longing to feel more pleasure. So they've read about Tantra. They've understood some of the concepts, and they're getting older, and they see that they can't have three ejaculations in a day, and they see the impact it's having, and they want to get out of the pattern that they're in towards themselves and move into deeper pleasure, but also more mature, evolved pleasure that's caring for their body, not getting so tired.
Right. Right. So this idea that like the pleasure we've kind of been sold by society, especially like connected to porn, that kind of it's called self-pleasure, but it's often kind of self-torture in a way, or self, mutilation. That like people could be, men are taught especially to be really fast and hard and even sometimes violent with their self-pleasure practice. And so I imagine there's a lot of work in unpacking that.
Huge amount, and they tend to be aware that the pace they're going at with their sexuality is not the pace that's actually creating mutual pleasure within their sexuality. So I do see a lot of men who have a relationship with pornography, and then we talk through how that may be impacting their sexuality, their speed, their connection to arousal, and how it's maybe not necessarily nourishing the relationship. And they understand that, but they almost don't know how to slow their sexuality down enough to be able to meet their real life partner instead of engaging in the fantasy of pornography.
So do you find there's that you have that it's really about shifting the nervous system? I'm hearing a lot of emphasis on slowing down.
So the nervous system is a huge part. I also teach them about how to breathe. A lot of men hold their jaw, clench, frown, and their whole body can go into a tightening experience because that's what they've learned. So a lot of it is about shaking, loosening, and feeling more. So we do a lot of tracking of sensations in my sessions, and then from that place of feeling, then they can start to notice when they need to slow down even more, and they become responsive to their sensations.
Yeah, and so what kind of you mentioned tools and things for those who are listening who've never had coaching or done sessions or even a workshop, could you give an idea? So we've heard a little bit about sounding and changing the breath. What are the main tools used in healing sexuality?
I work a lot with the belly, and initially bringing the consciousness down further. And so a lot of people, clients who come to me, they're in their heads, and I just get them to place their hands on their belly, open up their belly, and just make some really deep guttural sounds. And then by including the spine, so giving a wave to the spine, then they start to have an experience of being more in themselves. And by doing this wave and holding the belly, making sound, that's the first step in regulating the nervous system. And sometimes if they've been really deeply in their heads, I actually get them to bring their hands underneath their bum and just like clench their bum, and then take the sound all the way down and start shaking. And with that shaking, it loosens up the shoulders. The more our shoulders are lifted up towards our ears, up high, there's tension, but I want to invite some of that energy to come down and connecting them into the earth. So the earth is an incredible way to discharge and get some support from that exhale. And so I teach them about the consciousness that's in the breath, the inhale being the nourishment, the exhale being the release. And so with the shaking and putting your hands under your bum, they get to experience that fuller support. So it's that they can hold themselves rather than expecting someone else to do it. And even though I'm there holding the container, the objective I have is for them to be able to do this work with or without me, so they feel autonomous. I'm teaching them to fish, actually, not fishing for them.
Very good. And what if just trauma? I mean, I'm assuming that sometimes people find trauma that they didn't even know was there coming up. And so what happens then? What does that look like? And what happens then?
Trauma is a massive part of working with sexual energy, and it comes up and it's unexpected. And in those moments when it comes up, I bring them even more into the breath. Maybe they start to dissociate a little bit, and dissociation can show up as no longer breathing, no longer responding to what I'm saying, getting a little bit sleepy. Those are some of the signs. And so I call them back, I say their name, and I say, can you just tap the body very gently, tap the heart center, making some more sound. And maybe I get them to open their eyes and look into my eyes and just smile and be that loving presence that's inviting them into the body and to see that trauma, to be with the trauma, and to just witness it. We're not trying to change anything in those moments. We're just trying to stay in the body. And that's the first step. Yeah.
Beautiful. So, let's just circle back to the archetype. So there's, I'm hearing how important it is to work with embodiment, with breath, shifting in the nervous system, becoming more present in the body, all of these beautiful things, holding space for yourself, holding space for trauma when it comes up. So all these tools as a big part of healing sexuality. How do the archetypes fit in? Do you encourage someone, especially they're working one-on-one with you? Like I've seen a lot of archetype work that we do in groups with kind of playfulness and playing out and dancing in front of each other. How do you encourage someone on their own to explore sexual identity and sexual blueprints?
So I guide people through a practice of embodying archetypes, first of all, and that includes finding a meeting point with that archetype. So say it's the wild woman. Just using that as an example, you start to feel what a wild woman would look like. You visualize her. I guide people through a meditation to connect with her because everyone has access to these archetypes. They're universal. We've seen them. We do have an experience of them. And so when you say to people, visualize them, they're there. And we look at what they're wearing. We look they sound like we start talking to them, and as they introduce themselves more and become clearer, then they are the ones that guide the movement. So putting on music that encourages that archetype to come out more. What's their vocal expression? How do they want to move their arms? And then we get into a dance journey of embodying them, and that's when they move from being an external aspect to an internal part of us. And then that becomes practice when you've been initiated into that dance journey with that archetype. Then I say to people, go do this practice at home. Look at yourself in the mirror, open your eyes, gaze at your wild woman, give her a name, give her a space in your daily life. Where can she have it? Because most often, still with the wild woman, for instance, we don't give space to that. We go about our day, we do our shopping, we go pick up the kids from school, we drive our cars. Where's the wild woman in there? But if you say, okay, 20 minutes or 10 minutes a day, I'm putting on three songs, wild woman takeover time, then that heart starts to embody more, and then the sexual energy will activate. And as long as we're not putting expectations on ourselves to come out into that archetype right away, because it takes time, then they will flourish. And I've had clients say to me, Freya, I can't do the wild woman. I say, well, maybe that's how you feel now, but maybe just like rubbing your hair for an hour now and feeling where she's at here could encourage her to come out. And then let's see where you're at a month from now when you've done this practice every day for 10 minutes. And so that's how I guide it.
I love that you picked Wild Woman because that was such a big one for me. My first sexual opening when I was in my 20s in Tantra, that was a very big piece I had blocked because I was so brought up to be so civilized and going to Oxford and, eating 5-course dinners with the right knives and forks and whatever. And there was no place for Wild Woman. And it was such a big part for me of liberating my sexuality was to let myself be wild. So I really resonate with that one. What kind of archetypes do you find are there for men? Like, you've mentioned lots of female ones, like the wild woman and the mother and the priestess. What are kind of archetypes that men might want to embody and explore in themselves?
I'm very much in the space of listening to what the man who's in front of me wants to bring out. And most often it is a lion or it's a dragon. And it just seems to be the one. And then I've had a few wizards that have come out and the warrior as well. So when I've had men who are really not feeling their masculinity, the warrior comes through. But something about the dragon, that opening up those wings, taking up space, making more sound and giving themselves permission to be in that frequency is really strong. And unraveling a man's warrior and helping him to access that point of totality is incredible. And I think we're living in a time where certain archetypes are being castrated.
I was just going to say, what about fear of rejection? Because men have got the Me Too movement. I mean, plus we've got wars breaking out in the world. So it's like warrior, oh, war is all bad, Me Too movement. I mean, also for women, you know, don't be too wild, you'll lose your job or whatever, you know. So what do we do with that, with the fear of rejection and castration?
Well, I think it's really important to name it and talk about it, first of all. And just acknowledge that that might come up as a fear, like just seeing it, speaking to that part. And the number of men who go through a big opening and feel and have a little breathe, big deep exhale when I say it's okay to be wild. And then they access their wild and they scream and they open and they look into my eyes and really move that energy. And I'm still sitting there with love and openness and warmth towards them, and then often comes tears because they haven't had the space to express that.
So basically people shouldn't just express these archetypes willy-nilly because they probably will get re-rejected, but they need to find a witness who's on board with them, who feels safe enough and who understands the process.
Totally, absolutely. And there is a way of bringing that into couples so that they both feel safe to express more full emotions. So that when we're working with these more expansive archetypes, they can have space in the relationship, have space in your home, cushions to be able to move all that energy so that they can feel safe, because that's what they're longing for, is safety more than anything. And longing to be loved.
It's so interesting. It's such an interesting thing because, like, one of the things I love in Tantra is freedom of expression. And yet, somewhere along the way, I learned that if you just like run around beating up pillows and screaming, you can frighten other people and put them in a trauma response. So there's like this importance of finding the right space and the right witnesses and the right holding to let these aspects out. But I think it's really important between couples, like listening to you talk about couples creating more space. I think about how Esther Perel says that when you have an affair, it's another part of yourself. It's not another person you're actually looking for. It's another part of yourself. And if we don't feel safe enough to express all parts of ourselves in our primary relationship, then we either feel repressed or we go and try and find that part somewhere else with someone else.
Totally. And I remember I had a partner and we lived on the 7th floor in an apartment building, and we would sometimes get into conflict spaces and we would say to each other, I think we need to go to the forest now. And we would get in the car and we would drive to a forest where we knew we could be a lot more vocal. And I think it's really important to know the spaces where you can go and really unleash it. And sometimes couples say to me, oh, well, that's nice, but we live in the centre of London and the walls are quite thin and we can't do that. But I believe there's always an opportunity, whether it's using hand screens or whether it's going off to your local forest and expressing more vocally.
Yeah, probably it could even be a nice, I'm listening and thinking, oh, it'd be a nice idea even to then rent a little cottage in the middle of Wales or something, you know, and go as a couple. or with a bunch of friends or whatever, and just get that space in, because that is the downside of being too civilized, isn't it? Is that we
absolutely and the more you hang out with wild people, the wilder you get. And then you have friends.
That's very true.
Unleash that with you.
That's very true. Oh, beautiful.
I love that. You know, it's really important to keep a circle of people around you that don't just tolerate your fuller expression, but celebrate it. Mm. And sometimes that takes time if you're at the beginning of your journey and you're just realizing that, oh, I'm not fully expressed, and the people around me don't really know how to accept that. But knowing that once you make that intention of calling more of that in and finding spaces like Tantra festivals or Tantric retreats and stuff, then more people will start to show up who can celebrate your fuller expression. Mm-hmm. It takes mm-hmm. time.
Mm-hmm. I want to add one piece in there, because something I noticed is when I've really tracked this one, when we think I'm too much in a certain area, we sometimes manifest other people reflecting that back to us. You know, like if I think, oh, I'm too loud, then I constantly attract people who tell me I'm too loud. And I think it's also important to own the vulnerability and go to people and say, mm. I carry a fear of being too loud, and bringing that level as well as just expressing the loudness. You know what I mean? Like that this yeah. bizarre thing happens, like a kind of family constellation where you keep getting that feedback. And so we've got to break free, but we've also got to bring the vulnerability and ownership with it of sharing with people our fears.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have a very good friend of mine who went through a big process around feeling too much. So she had a necklace made of herself that said too much. And it was her way. It was her way of acknowledging that she's in it, but she didn't want to mm-hmm. deny it. So she was letting it be on her chest. And now very loud about that energy, but she can also come into the softness and holding of it when it shows up as her small self parts. It's very sweet.
Oh, that's really beautiful. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing. I've loved this journey of like looking at the birthing and looking at the repressions that people even put in something as big as childbirth, and then looking at this journey in both men and women actually of kind of rewilding and re-expressing, reintegrating. Is there any final thing you'd like to add for people who are listening who are there? I bet there are people listening or watching who are feeling like a bubbling, like, oh my God, I need to do this. And then up comes this big wall of like fear of like, oh my God, I'm going to threaten my relationship. My friends might leave, you know, like all those fears that can come up. For those people in that place, what can you share with them about those fears, especially, and how to move forward and be able to follow the desire to open up?
I just want to speak to how natural it is to feel that. And it's almost like when that's there, that's the invitation to come out a little bit more. And I find when I'm on an edge, I just wrap my arms around myself and I say, oh, honey, you're doing so well. I'm so proud of you for even considering going there. And I speak to the courage it takes to consider and walk just a little micro step. And that holding of I'm right there with you in this contemplation of this big leap of change that might happen. And I've been on the phone so many times with potential mentors and coaches, and I've got my arms wrapped around myself and I'm like, this is a really big deal for me, so I just want to speak that out.
Oh, yeah. That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that, and I love that you bring that compassion to your work, because I think that mixture is needed of, like, you know, inspiring people, encouraging them, but at the same time really honoring and holding those precious pieces that are in the fear, and that the small, you know, still holding that small self as we go on that journey.
Yeah, I mean, there's where we want to be and then there's where we are. And it's important to nurture the heart and the body and the energy for where it is now. Mm. A lot of compassion to listeners who for wherever they are in their journey, we all need a little tap on the back of like, well done for even listening to this podcast. I'm sure there's edgy bits.
Absolutely, absolutely. Oh, thank you so much, Freya. It's such a joy to have this conversation with you. We have so many of these conversations we don't record, and I'm happy to share one with others. I feel super inspired to be able to teach with you again soon. And we'll put some links around this so that people can find you if they want to work deeper with you. So thank you so much. Thank you for all that you've done in your life walk and the woman you've become, and all the people that you support. You really are a gift to this world.
An honor.